produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today, first-time pot offender appeals 55-year sentence to the U.S. Supreme Court. Weldon Angelos, a young aspiring rap producer and father of two, was selling marijuana to make some cash. After selling 3 8-ounce bags of pot to an informant who later testified that Angelos had a gun during two of the sales, Angelos was swept up in the minimum mandatory sentencing system, a system his attorneys say is out of control. Angelos was sentenced to 55 years in federal prison in 2002. There is no parole in the federal system, meaning Angelos could be well over the age of 70 when eligible to be released from prison. Lawyers have recently begun his last chance to overturn the sentence by appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court. The case has attracted the support of some of the country's top lawyers. Salt Lake City attorney Jerome Mooney teamed up several years ago with University of Utah law professor Eric Luna, an expert in criminal justice, to appear for Angelos pro bono. Recently, Michael Zimmerman, former Chief Justice of the Utah Supreme Court, joined in Angelos' defense, partly out of his personal belief that federal sentencing guidelines are out of control. Zimmerman is quoted in the Desert Morning Sun as saying, quote, "Minimum mandatories at the federal level are particularly way out of whack. I think have no penal justification and are totally PR-driven," close quote. Zimmerman pointed out that had Angelos been convicted in state court, he would have likely received a few years in prison and probation, particularly for a first-time offense. After handing down the sentence in 2002, U.S. District Judge Paul Castle penned a scathing criticism of the mandatory minimum laws. Castle pointed out that someone convicted of raping a 10-year-old child or detonating a bomb on an aircraft get less time in the federal system than Angelos. Lawyers for Angelos say this is a case of federal prosecutors stacking an unreasonable amount of prison time against a defendant to get him to fold to a plea bargain. Originally, federal prosecutors sought 105 years in prison for Angelos, but a judge lowered that. Prosecutors then pressed Angelos to accept a 15-year plea deal, which he rejected. The government has argued that judges are bound to carry out the will of Congress, yet several heavy-hitting legal minds disagreed in this case, saying this sentence crossed the line into cruel and unusual punishment. This was detailed in a friend of the court brief filed by former U.S. Attorneys General Janet Reno, Benjamin Civiletti, Griffin Bell, and Nicholas Katzenbach, and nearly 160 other ex-Justice Department officials and federal judges. A statement released to the audio stash by Families Against Mandatory Minimums, or FAM, states, quote, "Mandatory minimum sentencing laws should be reformed so that drug weights alone don't determine sentence length. Sentences should be based on traditional factors such as culpability, role in the offense, and the use of weapons or violence. Congress needs to allow the courts to consider all factors of the offense and the offender to ensure a fair and proportionate sentencing system," close quote. More information about this story and about mandatory minimum sentencing on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today on this Monday, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Visit norml.org. We'll start off your week right here on the Stash with our Activism Focus Day, and we'll begin by hearing an interview with Mason Tvert. He's the spokesman in Denver for Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation. Safer is sponsoring a statewide marijuana alcohol equalization initiative in Colorado. Mason, thanks for joining us here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Thanks for having me.
Recently, we heard about 129,000 signatures being submitted for a statewide ballot initiative. Tell us about the initiative and what it seeks to do in Colorado.
Yeah, what this initiative would do is amend state statutes so that possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana by adults 21 and older would be legal. And in essence, what it's doing is allowing adults who are of age to use alcohol legally to make a safer choice to use marijuana instead.
And this is based on your successful municipal campaign up there in Denver that showed, what, 54% of Denver residents came out in support of that?
Yeah, 54% of Denver voters came out and voted in favor of Initiative 100 last year, which made that exact same change, but at the city level. Unfortunately, the city has continued to enforce state law and has more or less ignored the will of the voters, so we are now seeking to change state law so that cities and towns in Colorado can decide for themselves whether it makes sense to punish adults for using less harmful drugs than alcohol.
Now, this is a very innovative initiative, especially as far as a statewide initiative goes, because it's not about medical access, where we've seen in many other states. This is about a regular adult responsible use.
Indeed. Yes, this is not, Colorado is fortunately already a medical marijuana state, and there are nearly 1,000 patients here on the statewide registry. And while we would obviously love to see them gain safer access to their medicine, I personally feel, and many people feel, that the most logical next step is to make marijuana legal for adult recreational use, because clearly if it's available for recreational use, there's absolutely no reason why someone who is in need of it for medical purposes wouldn't be able to get it.
In fact, if this initiative is passed, the over 1,000 Colorado patients up there for state medicinal marijuana will be the most protected patients in the country for any state that has medicinal marijuana.
Yeah, and that's what's so great about this. I mean, for so long, our federal government has more or less tricked people into thinking that it's controlling marijuana and marijuana laws. Everyone thinks that somehow if there was no state or local law enforcement, that the federal government would step in, but what it comes down to is the federal government only handles 1% of marijuana cases right now, and 99% are handled by local and state police. And the reason for that is because the federal government just does not have the resources or the time or to go out and handle this. So if this does pass, city and state police in Colorado will not be able to cite under city and state law. And if they do choose to cite under federal law, then there would need to be a federal court, a federal prosecutor, and a federal judge, all simply for an adult over 21 possessing a small amount of marijuana, possibly even like a gram or a joint. It's completely absurd, and we don't really expect to see that happen.
What kind of reaction have you had from the public? What kind of calls are you fielding, both from the public and from the media?
Well, the public has obviously gotten more and more involved in this as they hear about it, and that's really the point of our campaign, is to get the message out there and turn this into a serious issue that could have serious consequences, whether it's for the people or for the state or for other politicians running in local elections. The whole idea is to make this an issue that people care about, because right now when people go to vote, they generally only vote based on the one or two issues they strongly care about. Now, for your listeners, clearly that might be marijuana, but for the mainstream public, it's abortion, it's immigration, it's tax issues, all these other things. And what we want is to make marijuana and marijuana law the crux of this election season. We want people to know that this is on the ballot and to be asking these public officials what their stance is on it, and we want people to base their votes on that. I mean, it's absurd that there are currently candidates that live in areas that strongly support changing marijuana laws that are completely unwilling to introduce such legislation and so on, and we're hoping to stimulate that, and we're encouraging the press to help us do that by covering this issue and treating it similarly to other issues and not treating it like, it's a crazy drug issue that no one cares about.
Not treating it like it has for the last 35 years of our modern television media.
Exactly.
So, I think it's interesting. You guys have had a lot of success, especially in Denver, and with 129,000 signatures going into the Colorado Secretary of State's office this week, it shows a broad support for this issue. There must be some pushback as well. What kind of opposition pushback have you seen?
Well, currently we have a few different committees that have organized in opposition to us. None of them have been active thus far, although we did get slightly held up in the ballot title process. That's the process through which we go to set the name of the initiative and what would appear on the ballot. We have an opponent named Beverly Kynard. She is an old school drug warrior who many folks might have heard of before. She is known for testifying that industrial hemp will make you high, and so on. She's clearly not altogether. But she runs the Christian Drug Education Center down in Canyon City. It's a little prison town down in Colorado. She has been active. She's started a couple committees. We also have David Evans, who is a very well-known drug warrior, works with the Drug Free Schools Coalition, who is also registered a committee. And then we have the Attorney General and the Governor of the state who have vowed to really focus on this and fight it if it does make it on the ballot. And, you know, while this does seem daunting, it is welcomed as long as these groups are willing to engage in serious discussion and debate, because we would like nothing more than to be able to engage and debate with all of these groups. I mean, there's no doubt that marijuana is less harmful than alcohol. So all we really feel like we need to do is get that message out there. So the more opposition there is, the more we'll get to talk about it, and the more the media will care, and so on.
It sounds like a wonderful opportunity. You guys are creating the discussion up there and allowing some of that sort of age-old mindless propaganda, giving you an opportunity to really counter that with the reasonable sense of real modern science that backs up this position that marijuana is less harmful than alcohol. Not just equally harmful, but less harmful.
Indeed, yeah, and it's unfortunate that more people don't know that, whether it's people who have never used marijuana before or people who used it in the past but have since been tricked into thinking it's somehow 20 times more potent or whatever, you know, people need a way to relate to it. And if they've never used marijuana or don't currently use marijuana or have children who might use marijuana, we need to let them know that, hey, you know, they shouldn't be using marijuana if they're, you know, certain people shouldn't be using it. But if they do, it is, say, better than if they might go out and consume a bunch of alcohol, which they are already allowed to do. We shouldn't be prohibiting people from making a rational decision on in favor of better health.
Have the campuses up there been important to this initiative, and have young people been important to this?
Well, yeah, we got our start back in January of 2005 when we organized students at the University of Colorado Boulder and at Colorado State University, and we passed student referendums saying that the penalties for students caught with marijuana should not be greater than for students who are illegally drinking underage, because essentially you're sending the message that it's more acceptable to drink when we see all these serious problems on college campuses with alcohol and not so much with marijuana. So we do have a broad base of support at those two schools where we already organized students. There's another couple very large schools, the University of Northern Colorado up in Greeley, Mesa State out in Grand Junction, a couple of smaller private schools, and we really do plan on having a lot of organizing going on at those places, getting a lot of students involved, getting a lot of new students registered to vote, because we very well could bring out about 50, 60,000 new voters just based solely on the new college students in the state.
And that's interesting in and of itself, Mason. I think it's interesting that, you know, when you talk about making marijuana one of the top issues, especially when we talk about things like immigration and Social Security, things that really haven't moved forward in America for 30 years, we could really move forward very quickly on marijuana law reform, as demonstrated by you guys in Denver. But when we bring up this debate, how much education do people, you know, and bringing new voters in, how much education do we have to do for each person to understand the real reasoning behind marijuana equalization right now?
Well, for many people, we don't really need to educate them at all. There's a number of people out there, I'm sure many of your listeners, who already know that marijuana should be legal, and they know it's less harmful than alcohol, and they know the sky's not going to fall if we change our laws. But, you know, so those are the people who we work on with our message, just to get them to understand that that, hey, if you are going to be voting, you should know the facts about this drug. You should know all this stuff before you go and vote whether it should be legal or not. But more so importantly with the colleges, it's just to get them to know that they have the opportunity. And that's really what we'll be focusing on in large part, is getting media attention, making this a big statewide issue, something that gets brought up in conversations, whether it's in classrooms or at lunch, you know, or at parties on the weekends. We want people talking about this, talking about the opportunity to vote on this, and hopefully if everyone knows that they have the chance to simply go to a polling place and spend 5 minutes and vote to make marijuana legal, we'll get a lot of people out there voting that never have before.
And young people really do need issues. I mean, in study after study, the reason that young people aren't voting is because they don't feel connected to the issues that the candidates are talking about. And here you're not talking about a candidate. You're giving an issue right on the ballot. What the best way to be a citizen activist and exercise your right to vote.
Exactly. And that's all we're asking that people out here in Colorado do. And we're confident that if we get our message out there, and whether they've heard it before or not, if people hear that marijuana is less harmful than alcohol and they show up to vote, we think that we should do fine.
Mason Tvert is spokesman for a safer alternative for enjoyable recreation in Denver, Colorado. Mason, thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you, Chris.
Of Safer in Denver. We have links to Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Now it's time for some pod safe independent music found up at podshow.com.
Now give me money.
with some pod-safe independent music found up at podshow.com. We have links to Podshow and all of the artists we air on the program at normalaudiostash.com. Next up today, Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of the Normal Foundation, joins us with this essay on the ONDCP's recent media appearances.
It's hard to imagine, especially from a pharmacological point of view, why everyone does not recognize that methamphetamine abuse is a major concern in our country. Yet, oddly, our drug czar, John Walters, head of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, ONDCP, still refuses to concentrate his publicly reported annual budget of nearly $15 billion on meth. Instead, choosing to continue the government's breathless, hysterical, and now 69-year-old National Reefer Madness campaign. On another of his now infamous anti-drug junkets, this time in Oregon, which, according to government and arrest data, has higher than average meth use, Walters was asked by a reporter from the Oregonian why he has concentrated on pot, not meth, during his five-year tenure. Walters responded by noting that marijuana remains the most widely used illicit drug, declaring public officials who identify meth as a bigger crime problem than marijuana short-sighted, and claiming that most meth users he meets at rehab centers say they started with pot. Quote, "People don't want to hear about that epidemic," Walters said. "They don't want to hear about that BC bud and high-potency marijuana that are coming into our country. We've got more kids dependent on marijuana than all illegal drugs combined. There is kind of a blind spot here that I think has to be confronted. Marijuana is okay. It's all the other hard drugs that are bad. That's silly." Unquote. Clatsop County District Attorney Josh Marquet, however, quickly and plainly disagreed, reminding the same press junket that, quote, "methamphetamine is directly associated with violent and psychotic behavior. Marijuana is not," unquote. Walters later shrugged off local reporters and columnist suggestions that his timely visit to Oregon masked the ONDCP's barely veiled efforts to blunt local marijuana law reform efforts nationwide, specifically, in this case, a well-funded effort called Citizens for a Safer Portland that's trying to make marijuana the lowest police priority in that city. A few days after Walters' propaganda visit to Oregon, drug czarina-in-waiting, Mary Ann Solberg, ONDCP's deputy director, was enlisted for one of her many taxpayer-funded anti-marijuana public relations efforts, this time to obliquely oppose the Safer Initiative's campaign effort in Colorado to remove all penalties and fines for 1 ounce of marijuana. Spouting off in the Christian Right's Focus on the Family's daily newsletter, based in Colorado Springs, Solberg writes that marijuana, quote, "is not a benign drug, but a serious drug with consequences. To legalize something for recreational purposes that we have documented does health harm to people seems silly," unquote. Silly? Seems to me that's exactly the way we treat alcohol. But at least ONDCP stayed on message. This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, in Washington, D.C.
Alan St. Pierre is the executive director of the NORML Foundation and joins us regularly here on the Audio Stash. Now, an Audio Stash discrimination alert, August 14th, 2006. NORML endeavors to help our supporters understand how to exercise your rights, especially when it comes to interfacing with the police. We encourage people to treat law enforcement officers with respect and courtesy, but also to assert their constitutional liberties. Unfortunately, due to the corruption and abuse of power, cops don't always afford citizens the opportunity to their constitutional rights. When a police encounter occurs and you feel your rights have been violated, it is imperative that you speak out against any abuse or brutality suffered at the hands of the law. Staying silent not only allows overzealous and aggressive law enforcement officers to continue to abuse their power, but also drags down the rest of the hardworking and honest cops on the streets, making the good cops' jobs a lot tougher. Speaking up not only helps citizens, but it helps law enforcement as well. It's come to our attention here on the Audio Stash that during the recent Lollapalooza Festival in Chicago, Illinois, some members of the local police department brutally assaulted and beat at least two peaceful citizens without explaining the charges against them, reading their rights, or allowing them the option of cooperating. Charges were falsified, and the two were then detained for an excessive period of time, while having their request to speak with legal counsel disregarded. This ordeal was perpetrated only for the police to dismiss all of the charges a short time later. If anyone else has suffered a similar encounter with the Chicago police at the same event, Lollapalooza in Chicago, please contact us and let us know. Make your voice heard to protect all of our community. We all have to work together to defend our freedoms in America and to prevent cruelty and corruption within law enforcement, curtailing the few officers who abuse their power. Contact 888-67-NORMAL. That's 888-67-NORMAL or NORML.org. Visit the legal section of Normal's website for references and links to attorneys in your area. And if your rights have been violated, by all means, contact your local state American Civil Liberties Union chapter. This has been a discrimination alert here on the Audio Stash today. If you have any questions, send us an email, podcast@norml.org. Let's wrap up our Monday here on the Audio Stash with a little comedy found up at podshow.com. Again, we have links to all the artists we air from Podshow up on our daily pages at normalaudiostash.com. Here's the Killer Kona Buds with this little comedy track, Krusty the Snowman.
Oh, Krusty!
The Killer Kona Buds with that comedy song, Krusty the Snowman, found up at podshow.com.
Let's do something good tonight.
Whether on a train, plane, ferry, or automobile, these days I'm never far removed from listening to Normal's daily Audio Stash and weekly news on my computer or iPod. Where else in the world can folks listen to up-to-date information produced specifically for cannabis consumers? This is Normal's Executive Director, Alan St. Pierre, and Normal is growing the truth about cannabis, and the harvest is yours to reap. Tune in every day at 4:20 p.m. for your daily Audio Stash. Get hooked up with Normal's daily and weekly news podcast by visiting norml.org or normalaudiostash.com.
Let's get high.
This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Alan St. Pierre, Paul Armentano, and Mason Tavert for contributing to today's show. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.